I started to realize that I had all of these skills that I didn't know the names of, is really what it ended up being. It was like, oh, like that's what that's called, that's what that's called, that's what that's called. It wasn't malicious. It's just a part of it was a part of the culture, but it felt as if they were trying to hide the names of these skills so that they could call them all expectations.
You are listening to Hearts and Sciences, the podcast devoted to your success as a researcher and your happiness as a human being. I'm your host, Elizabeth Andrews. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the podcast, we are talking about imposter syndrome, the sense that many of us have that we don't really know what we're doing in the way we think we should, and that any day now we'll be exposed and lose all credibility. It certainly hits home for me, and my guest Peter Harrison brings a lot of insight to this as someone who's been writing about and leading workshops on imposter syndrome for a couple of years. And he also brings a perspective of someone with ADHD and autism. So we get into the parallels between masking as a coping mechanism and imposter syndrome as this sense of wearing a disguise. This one goes pretty deep. I share my middle school trauma. I hope you'll enjoy it.
Would you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Peter Harrison. I'm a ADHD and autistic professional. I have over a decade of experience in customer support and team leadership. So I've been with Zapier for 3 years now, and was at Apple for 5.5 years before that.
When did you start leading imposter syndrome webinars? When did you recognize that there was a need and that you could fill it?
I started doing imposter syndrome webinars, like paneling imposter syndrome webinars, 3 months into my time at Zapier. They were already in motion. They happened on a quarterly basis. The webinars were targeted towards onboarding employees. I had attended one, and it was kind of the first time I had really become familiar with the term. I came face to face with my imposter syndrome.
Go ahead and give a definition to imposter syndrome. How do you define it?
The definition that comes to mind is this: it's like a secret knowledge that you have of yourself that if you don't consistently meet the expectations of everyone else around you, they'll find out that you really aren't who you say you are. Anybody who's encountered imposter syndrome understands this sense, but it is this feeling in the pit of your stomach of like, I'm going to be found out. Somebody's going to figure me out. It's deeper than I don't know what I'm doing. It's that I don't know anything about who I am, why I'm here, what I want, where I'm going, or even how I got here.
I'm getting a sense of like, I don't deserve to be in the role I'm occupying. And so I have to continue to dupe people.
Right. Yeah. There's the fear of being exposed, being found out, and this disbelief, discredit of your lived experience, past experience, proved experience. Like, if I don't perform at the same level at all times, then I'm perceived as no good and perfection is a must. And performing below this standard exposes me as a fraud, and that I'm subconsciously keeping score of my accomplishments / how consistently I've performed until I make a mistake. And then that mistake replaces the entire previous record. It's like everything I did before is gone. The only thing that matters now, the only thing that exists is the mistake that I've made. And then, like, to put it into this metaphor, it's like building a house and trying to lay foundations and frameworks and walls, and the stakes are exceedingly high, but it feels like I have to do all of this. I have to build this house with cards. Like, that's the only supplies I have. And so one mistake brings, if not the whole house, a large portion of it down. And then you also sit there and wonder, like, is this hard for anybody else?
And as you've discovered, the answer is yes.
It is. Yeah, it actually is. And that was what was so beautiful about these webinars, is you would be sitting in these, you know, Zoom calls with a bunch of people who would be sitting there nodding as people would be talking about the paralyzing fear that everything I got up to that point and every opportunity I received, every success that I reached was luck.
And in that sense, undeserved, unpredictable, unrepeatable.
And unrepeatable is exactly it. That made it really difficult to step up or step out or take chances or, you know, make a mistake. At Apple, it was like everything was watched and everything was timed and everything was clocked and everything was tracked. And so because there was that level of observation working in a fishbowl, it became really difficult to like do things on your own and feel like you were encouraged to do things on your own. Whereas at Zapier, it was the very first thing we were told is that we want you to do things and default to action and be autonomous and be yourself and be authentic and be real and take chances within, you know, within a scope.
Can you give me a before and after? So describe to me the insecurity era.
Yeah.
And then contrast that with what it's like to be Peter now.
Yeah. Ooh, insecurity. That's a good one. I had no confidence in my expertise. I had no confidence in my skill set. I had no confidence in my ability to do the things I was already doing, had been doing. My imposter syndrome journey has changed. I've changed. I started to realize that I had all of these skills that I didn't know the names of is really what it ended up being. It was like, oh, like, that's what that's called. That's what that's called. That's what that's called. It was almost like the entire time I spent at Apple, it's like they were, it felt like, which is not exactly what they were trying to do. It wasn't malicious. It's just it was a part of the culture, but it felt as if they were trying to hide the names of these skills so that they could call them all expectations.
Hide the names of these skills so they could call them expectations. Because it's like, if you don't know that you're bringing in these things that you have and that are valuable and that you take with you when you go, it's treated like anybody would be expected to do this, not like you have these capabilities. When I translate this to the academic environment, one thing that happens is many people with PhDs have no idea how transferable their skill set is, and they feel trapped. And not just PhDs, any specialist, right? I know lawyers with the same problem. They would love to leave. They would love to try something else. I truly think that they can only operate within their very narrow environment, because I think it's what you're talking about here. There's a very clearly defined progression in their career. And so they don't understand what it is about them, what it is they're doing that is enabling them to move along that progression. And if they did know, then they could use those same skills in another context, should they wish to do so. So I want to see what you were able to eventually identify, what it was that was pushing you forward at Apple that you now know you have, skills that you can now name.
Empathy and inclusivity, team management and development, proactive and initiative-driven, project management and collaboration, interdepartmental collaboration, public speaking and presentation skills. I don't know why I always thought I didn't have that. For some reason, I always thought I didn't. One of the biggest ones is the tooling, the software, the technological skills that I've amassed, adaptability and transparency, process improvement, research analysis, and data-driven decision-making.
It sounds like you got in touch with your own capabilities. You use this term default to action. The default to action, in some sense, is defaulting to that first instinct, the skills you have, rather than defaulting to the second guess, defaulting to the critique, defaulting to some sort of externally derived idea.
Yeah, I think what I've discovered recently is this sense of self, this identity, this like internal default of where I act from and where I validate that action from. There was still this need to validate externally what I was feeling internally, which doesn't make sense, right? The belief that I have to build the house with cards is not true. I don't have to build the house with cards. I can build it with all of the things that I know how to build it with. I can build it with all of the supplies that are long lasting and that are foundational and don't erode and are sturdy and will stand the test of time.
When you were describing the house, what I was starting to see before you were saying that it was a house of cards was, okay, you know, I've built this concrete foundation. We've got the walls in, insulation, everything's there. And then I put one nail in half an inch off and the entire thing crumbles. That's perfectionism. Mm-hmm. And that's this feeling that, like you said, I can have done everything brilliantly up until now and like one false step, one misspelled word, and the whole thing just dissolves. And so it was really interesting then when you said, well, because it's all built of cards, and if we could understand and believe that actually we are building with solid materials, the careers we build and the relationships we build and the lives we build, and I think I'm doing better when I have a little faith in the resilience of the interconnected network. It's not just on me, and it's not just on my planning. I did want to talk a little more about the transformation that you saw happening when you were helping to lead these webinars. What did you hear or see from participants in terms of their realizations and their takeaways?
It was interesting. People would ask us questions about specific tactics, things that we dealt with inside and outside of work. The really interesting thing, I think, was watching some of the people who joined the webinars and then like kind of tracking them throughout the time I've been at Zapier and seeing like either reach out for help, reach out, you know, about things they were struggling with, or reach out to share things that they were seeing successes in or triumphs in or things like that.
I love it. So you've spoken about having ADHD and autism. What would you like to share about the intersection of imposter syndrome and ADHD and autism?
Yeah, due to the high level of masking and camouflaging and compensating and assimilating that autistic and ADHD people do in order to blend in, essentially, that I would say that it is probably the most common intersection that exists. Masking is something that happens as a coping mechanism, as a way to survive, because they are pointed out because they're different, or they are ostracized because they're different. And so they realize that in order to be accepted, they need to mask. They need to camouflage some of their traits so that they look like others. They need to assimilate. So they change, they compensate. So they reduce parts of themselves. And what ends up happening is eventually someone's going to figure out that I'm not really this mask that I'm putting on. And that is the deepest fear that a lot of people who know that they have ADHD or that they're autistic or ADHD, and they know that they mask at times. So this imposter syndrome is a very lived experience for people who are neurodivergent. And the unmasking journey that a lot of people who are neurodivergent go through and learning kind of when it's safe to unmask is very akin to this imposter syndrome journey, where they're trying to figure out like, okay, well, do I really believe in myself and who I am? And am I confident in this identity? And do I feel strong enough, safe enough, confident enough to be myself?
What's the message you would love to give that person?
The message I would love to give that person is that the best version of yourself is the most authentic version of yourself. The most confident and strongest version of yourself is the person who is just crawling inside of you to get out. And your world may flip upside down. The things around you may change. Confronting that fear may take you months or years to do. But I know that when you do it, it'll be okay, because you'll be surrounded by the environment and the people and the things that align with who you truly are and support who you truly are. And want you to continue to grow as you truly are.
Can I share my middle school trauma?
Oh, 100%. I love middle school trauma.
So I was one of these nerds that did very well in standardized tests. And after passing through anorexia that almost killed me, I was trying to reclaim my sense of self and sort of experimenting with being a little bit happier in my person. This was, you know, I was 12. And then I walk into the art room one day and the students have gathered under the leadership of, you know, my supposed best friend to tell me, you're not going to have any friends in high school because you're so conceited. There's so many things I wish I could have asked at the time. You know, I wish I could have been curious about, like, what are you basing this on? And you know, what has motivated you to do this? But yeah, I've spent the 30 years since undoing that belief that if I like myself, no one else will like me.
Yeah, that's so real. It fits very closely in with the landscape that I'm describing. The things that I experienced through middle school, through my childhood at home, through a lot of that were definitely messages of, if you think too highly of yourself, or if you think of yourself much at all, then you're not a person worth being around, in a sense. And now I know that it's essential, not just to love myself in a theoretical or existential sense, but like believe without the shadow of a doubt that like I know exactly what I'm doing here. And if somebody doesn't agree, that's okay. Like, it's very okay for someone to disagree with my approach on things, my way of doing things, because I disagree with other people's way of doing things.
I begin to see finally now in my 40s is that, well, that is a middle school way of thinking, and we need adults. You know, and adults have conviction and a willingness to hear and adjust.
True. Yeah, very true. Not all adults. But
well, I guess this is what I've been thinking of lately, is that not all people become adults.
Ah, there you go. That's a good one. Not everybody becomes an adult because they aren't ready to become the adult they need to be.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of inner work and willingness to face those dark parts of ourselves. And like imposter syndrome, it's a part of my mental and cognitive experience that I will always come around to at some point in my life. How long I stay there is the difference. It's led me to a different way of processing internally the landscape that I want to explore and need to explore in order to continue my growth. And so I've learned how to engage with my imposter syndrome better. I've learned how to engage with the dark parts of myself, the dark shadow parts of myself in a way that I'm not afraid to go there because I know what's going to be there. I know what tends to be there, and I know that I don't have to stay there.
And understanding that there's room for all of it, like you said, holding space and not getting confused between certain lenses and feeling states versus your home base.
Yeah.
This has been a journey for me as well, to recognize that there is no one setting that is me. The planner is not home base. The journaler is not home base. The mother and the wife, you know, that's not home base either. There's a home base beneath all of it.
And a reduced ego, in a sense, because like my sense of self-belief doesn't come from this kind of artificial inflated self where I think that I have more than I have. It's all too aware of the things that I lack and the things that I don't have the ability to do. And so there's a lot of humility and the people that I get to build relationships with in that way are really, the connections and the relationships are really strong and really fruitful because the best word I can think of is the reciprocity of how they want to invest in that relationship is really incredible. The more I've learned to step into and understand my like real and authentic self and understand how to connect who I am to who other people are, the more doors I've seen open, the more opportunities and possibilities with this really interesting byproduct of this like really heightened level of confidence and self-assuredness and belief in my identity.
Yeah. I just think this is so valuable. Thank you so much.
Yeah, 100%. I'm so glad that we had the chance to do it.